If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It's the Rhythm of the City, 94.3 WYBC. I'm Juan Castillo, and this is the Electric Drum. Now, you know, WYBC is all about positive youth in our community. And every once in a while, I've got to get one of those young people in the studio to talk about the things that they're doing that are uplifting the community and uplifting all of us. I have Mahogany Dolberry here in the studio. She's graduated from Darien High School this year. And she's going to college at Miami University in Ohio. She's going to be a pre-med student, also psychology, and she's also a track star. So how you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
Wonderful, wonderful. Okay, so tell me about growing up in Darien.
Well, so I was born in New Haven.
Okay.
And I got accepted into this ABC program. It's called A Better Chance. And it's a national organization that takes inner city minorities and puts them in affluent communities to attend schools they wouldn't otherwise be able to go to,
yes,
whether because of geographics, financial, etc. So when I got to Darien High School, there was like 0.3% African Americans there. So the running joke in my house was just if there was anyone of color in the hallway, they probably lived with me, because that's most of the girls that went to the high school that were minorities lived in my house with me. But it's gotten a lot better. I'll definitely say I definitely had a lot of hard nights and hard days in the town just because it wasn't always the most accepting. However, I met amazing people there, and after a while, it really did become my home. So saying goodbye to it yesterday was not an easy task.
Right. Well, you know, I mean, it's interesting, you know, because, you know, back in the 60s and 70s, I mean, there was actual busing to mm-hmm. different affluent neighborhoods, you know, and, you know, it was a lot more, you know, overt, you know, in terms of the racism and so forth and so on. But you didn't experience something to that degree, or did you?
I only had one incident of outright racism, but it was more of a, like, the kids there aren't exposed. And I try my best not to blame the kids themselves, just the exposure of it. Just because if I was to blame every kid for it, I wouldn't have friends in the high school. But I found that it's usually they generally just don't know how to address someone or how to approach someone. And it becomes one of those things where they're afraid to approach you because they don't want to offend you, or they don't know how to talk to you, or they don't understand. And for a lot of these kids, like, they've never had any real communication or real down to earth with a minority student. So it was kind of like, it was weird for both of us, but I try to tell them, like, look, like, I'm just like you are. There's no difference between us other than the color of my skin. And I mean, I'm open to any questions you have as long as you're not outright ignorant or just aggressive or anything in that sense. And a lot of kids understood that. And of course, like, there were people that I strayed away from and I just wouldn't have nothing to do with, but there were also people that were generally, they were just interested in me as a person, which I always loved, because when you go to a new place, like, you want to know that people care. You want to know that they want to know who you are, but not because of your skin tone, but because you are not from the same place as them. And the hardest thing in that town was just all of these kids went to elementary and middle all together. So they're getting all dumped into the high school. They all have their set friend groups. They all know each other by first and last name, which was very foreign to me. But it's definitely a big adjustment, but it's one that you really have to embrace, and you have to pick and choose your battles, and you have to know that you're not always going to be able to go off. Like, in New Haven, like, if someone says something to you, you're just like, oh, okay, like, what's up? But it's when you're there, you kind of have to really go down to their level and be like, this is not okay. This is why you shouldn't do it again, kind of thing.
Right. And I mean, obviously, you also represented the ABC program. Mm-hmm. You know, did you live with a family there?
So in the program, the community school program is set up so that you live in a house with 6 to 8 other girls.
Okay.
Or 6 to 8 girls in one house. And you have a family that lives with you there. Mm. So it's mom and dad or mom and mom, depending on their situation.
Right.
And they have a house. It's a small apartment. It's like 2 bedroom and a living room, bathroom attached to the house itself.
Right.
And the house itself has a study hall room because we have mandatory study halls. Study hall hours in my house is 7:30 to 9:30. In some houses, it's 7 to 10, depending on what they want, what their program decides they need. And excuse me, it's a town run program. So it's run by women or men in the town that feel that they wanted this. They have to decide to found a program in that town to start it. Our program was founded in 1981. So it wasn't a very long time ago compared to some programs. However, it was during a time where there was not much tolerance in that town. And we've had alumni come back and tell us stories that really make us appreciate like the mean looks that we might get or the rumors. Like, you really have to take into perspective just how much growing the town has done and how much longer it has to go, but just how far it's come in general.
Right. This is Juan Castillo. I'm speaking to Mahogany Dolberry. She's initially from New Haven, and she became a part of the ABC program that sends, minority students or students from the inner urban areas into towns, and they lived there. You know, she was sent to Darien. She went to Darien High School, and she's graduated this year. She's going to the Miami University in Ohio, and you know, we're talking about her experience there during those 4 years. Now, was it 4 years that you were there?
Yep, all four years. So you can transfer in. So one of my roommates, my sophomore year, I want to say, she transferred in her sophomore year. So she was only there for 3.
Right.
But they usually start you freshman year.
Now, you know, it's interesting because, you know, I mean, folks talk about, like, you know, trying to change America, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, you know, what this program is doing, and I think it's a responsibility of every human being, including, you know, Caucasians and, mm-hmm. and whatever your persuasion might be, to really expose yourself and your culture to other people. So that way they begin to understand that, you know, you just can't box us into, you know, this idea that we're all the same or, mm-hmm. or that, you know, some of the negative images that you might see is really about all of us. Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so in a sense, you know, you were kind of a revolutionary there. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, for every a white person that you turned around,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's one less person that's going to be, you know, doing any kind of racial profiling.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's a wonderful
and
thing.
And you try to make sure that you give them that exposure, only because there are plenty of African-American people that will not be as nice to these kids in the future as you are.
Right.
And that's why some kids are afraid to approach, because they know that there are certain people that you can talk to and there are certain people that don't want to be bothered with you.
Right.
And I know plenty of African-Americans that are just like, oh, you live with the white people. Oh, mm-hmm. All your friends are white, kind of thing. And I try to persuade them, like, don't be like that. There's no need for that. We're right. not going anywhere with that attitude, kind of thing. But I don't know. It's definitely something that you kind of have to get around. And growing up in New Haven, like, all my friends, for some reason, I was just the whitest black girl in, like, my grade. Like, right. it was just what I was known as. So me growing up, I was like, oh, I'm going to have a blast. Like, I'm going to be surrounded by people that I'm supposedly just like. And it was like, no, you're still not like us, kind of thing.
Right. But what's interesting is that, I mean, I hear in you. You speak perfect English, and congratulations on that.
Thank you.
I mean, is that something that you kind of really went out of the way to really focus on?
It's kind of just something that happened.
You read a lot and the whole nine?
Yeah. I mean, that's something that, like, my family has always been like, wow, you speak, like,
right.
like fluently, kind of thing.
Right. And it's interesting because, I mean, you know, I mean, growing up, same situation with me. I was really, you know, all about the English language. But by the same token, you know, I kind of turned it off and went into slang and everything else, you know,
yep.
so I can appease my friends, you mm-hmm. know, who were talking that way also. So I didn't get the whole, you know, you sound like a white boy thing.
Yeah.
Right. But I mean, it's interesting because it's like, really, you know, that's kind of racist right there, you mm-hmm. know, like.
And I try to tell people that.
Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Try to tell people it comes from both sides. Like,
yeah.
it's not only white people I know plenty of African-Americans that are racist. It's definitely a two-way street. So that's right. just another thing that I've grown up knowing.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing is that, you know, I mean, we want to get to a point where it's like, if you speak proper English, that doesn't mean that you sound white.
Mm-hmm.
It means that you got an education,
mm-hmm.
right?
You know, yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, your perspective on, like, you know, black America and, you know, African-Americans as a whole and how you fit into that role, as well as fitting into the larger, America, right? You don't have to. You don't have to give up. You know, your blackness, right?
Exactly. it's always been like an internal battle, only because, like, I've learned that because I grew up in New Haven, but because I also grew up in Darien, there it's very, very, very different. And when I come here for summers and I hang out with my friends in New Haven, I definitely hear myself change, but it's not a big change. Like, right. I definitely try to appease them and like what they're saying and try to be on with them. But it's like when I get back to Darien, it's like, all right, we're up, we're good, it feels natural just to like be there, and I feel natural in every place. It was just something that I've learned. But it's definitely, they're two very, very different worlds. But the people don't understand that they're very similar in that they both have their own prejudices. They both have their own insecurities. They both have their own fears of each other. And I've heard that from both ends. And it's just like, I really want to bring, like, now that I've been brought into this community, I always wanted to bring my friends there and let them see what it is. Because my friends, the friends that I grew up with in New Haven, don't understand. Like, they're just like, why'd you go there? Like, why are you going to an all-white town? Like, aren't they mean? And all my friends in Darien are terrified to step into Stanford. And I'm just like...
To Stanford, wow.
To Stanford. And, like, my friends, they don't feel safe walking around Stanford alone, let alone... They think of New Haven, and it's, like, chaos. And I'm just like, I walk around there, and I feel fine. I understand why. Like, I knew plenty of kids in middle school, and even kids now that aren't in the safest environments. I didn't live in the safest place in New Haven. Like, I was on the bus on my way to camp when New Haven was called like top deadliest city. Mm-hmm. And I remember that day clearly because all the kids on the bus cheered and I sat there in fear, like, what is going on?
Right.
But it's very, very different. And I've always felt a little bit out of place in every environment only because I never completely fit with one group. Right. Either group particularly, but it's always been my own, like, I understand you, and this is where I stand kind of thing.
Right. And, you know, it's interesting because I think that in a lot of cases, like, people ask me, you know, being in, you know, doing what I do, well, where do you live, Juan? You know, and, you know, I live on the border, you know, mm-hmm. between Hampden and New Haven, and I get both sides, right? You know, and... By the same token, though, people ask me, well, like, you know, why is it so much violence and whatever, right? And, you know, and I mean, when I was in college, I wrote a paper about, you know, rich neighborhood versus poor neighborhoods, mm-hmm. right? And one of the things that I talked about in the paper was the fact that, you know, like, and you could attest to this, right? Like, if you get a car when you're 16, you don't have to worry about college. You know, you don't have to worry about money. You know, your life is pretty much comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no reason. There's really no reason for you to do the kinds of things that are going to get you in trouble.
I see that. So I've tried to explain that to my friends. However, living in Darien, I also, and it became more available to my knowledge this year. But these kids go through tons of stuff. Like, I've looked at like the kids that have the money and knowing my friends that don't have the money. And they both have issues that are just unbelievable. Like, the kids in my town, like, I would say 95% of my town goes to therapy for some kind of anxiety or some kind of depression or has some kind of issues.
Wow.
And one of the biggest problems in our town right now, or that is up and coming, is, like, a heroin addiction.
Yes.
And that's becoming more and more an epidemic. And that's not something that you would think of because in a town like Darien, things are covered up. Things aren't talked about. Right. Like, my best friend, like, one of my best friends had anxiety and went to therapy, and I didn't know until my senior year.
Mm-hmm.
No one talks about these issues. It's swept under the carpet.
Right.
Like, if a girl was to commit suicide or someone was to commit suicide, it's not addressed completely. It's not, you don't talk to these kids in the way that they feel as if they can talk to someone, because these kids are under so much pressure, and you may feel like their parents care, like their parents are pushing them. Like, a lot of kids in New Haven don't have those kind of parents, but at the same time, these same parents are pushing their kids into addiction, pushing these kids into partying every night and drinking and doing drugs. And these kids ultimately go on to college and, like, they get out there, maybe they don't know what it's like to experience, so they get out there and they act crazy, and then they end up dropping out.
So it's not always about the money.
Mm-mm. I feel like a lot of the time, the money causes a lot of problems for these kids. I feel like the kids that have the money get in a lot more trouble than the kids that don't.
Wow, that's interesting. Wow, and you lived it.
I did live it. It, yeah. It was, it's something that you really got to open your eyes to and really try to understand, because I feel like a lot of people look at these kids and they're just like silver spoons since the day they were born. Like, right. That's it. Like, they're set. And they don't really get to know them and get to know that, like, they've been through a lot too. And they're going through a lot. There are kids that I've seen really crack under pressure. And they're like, I've seen kids cry over a B+. And I'm just like, I'm good. Like, yeah, right. I'll take it.
Well, yeah. Well, the pressure of their parents saying, listen, you got to get into Harvard.
Exactly. Right? And that's a big thing. And it's like, when you don't, like, there are plenty of kids that all, I mean, and it's not all rich people in Darien. And I think some people fail to see that also. There are plenty of people that, like, don't get me wrong, there are some houses that I'm just like, I could house my family and extended family in that house.
Yes.
But there are also really, really low-key housing. And there are people that are not at the top of that financial trade. And living in a town like Darien, you do get recognized for not being that high financially.
Right.
And then you get those kids that aren't, like, there's a very big group in that town that isn't a part of the big financial, like, they don't all have that money, like,
right.
They're struggling. Just like, I know a girl that is paying for her own college, a girl that paid for her own car, is still paying for her own car, and they work just as hard as me, and I'm just like, I'm just trying to make it through high school and you already working, like,
it's
one of those things where I was blessed with a family that is going to help me, and she's paying for her own, but on the other end, I have a best friend whose family is completely paying for her tuition,
right?
All 4 years.
This is Juan Castillo. You listen to the electric drum, and I'm quite sure that you're impressed by this young lady. You know, she's from New Haven. Went to the ABC program in Darien. Went to Darien High School. She graduated this year. Mahogany Dolberry. And we're talking about her life, you know, in Darien, and also we're going to be talking about her future too. So while you were in Darien, what were some of the things that you got involved with? You know,
I did a lot. So freshman year, I did basketball. I played basketball a lot in New Haven. My dad was my coach here, my stepfather rather, and I loved basketball. And I did it freshman and sophomore year, and then I stopped. It just wasn't, it wasn't as fun. When you get to a town like Darien, it's very, very competitive. Not only academically, but also as far as sports. Like, if you, Darien was on the news a lot this year. We won a lot of championships.
Yes, but
it's very, very hard. Like, I got tendonitis and shin splints freshman year.
Wow.
And it's not something I'm ever going to get rid of, I'm not happy about, but it wasn't fun anymore. And I love the game. And I said, look, if I want to have fun in this game, I need to not do this, because I'm not going D1. I'm not trying to get recruited for basketball. I'm playing it because I love the sport. And I didn't feel like I had enough room for that anymore being on the team. So I was like, that's fine. I'll play pickup games in the backyard if I need to. I will play this sport when I want to at my leisure.
Right.
So that was something that I had a hard time with, and I talked to my dad about it. I was like, look, I love this sport, and I know that you wanted me to play it, but I can't enjoy it if I keep doing it this way.
Right.
So I did drop that. Sophomore year, I picked up cheerleading, which I did when I was younger, but I didn't get a chance to get into because we moved a lot. So I absolutely love that. It was one of my favorite things at the high school. However, it was difficult because cheerleaders at my high school are not really respected. No one really likes the cheerleaders at my high school.
Wow.
And which is, I always get a, it's very interesting, because I always got upset. I was like, High School Musical was a complete lie. I had high expectations and they failed me. However, because I didn't do it freshman year and I took in the time to just see the school, see what people were like and things of that sort, and kind of develop myself, because it was a big personal change for me.
Right.
People knew me as Mahogany, like, not as the cheerleader. I wasn't labeled as quickly. Of course, I was Mahogany the ABC girl, which is another another thing that we battled, which is another story. But people understood me for me, and I made a lot of friends freshman year that I didn't, at the time, I didn't feel like I had friends, but it was more people knew me. People knew who I was at the very least.
Right.
Mostly because I walked into too many senior math classes by accident, but people definitely knew who I was. I got a lot of highs in the hallway, which I came to appreciate. Really do come to appreciate those highs or those small smiles. But so then sophomore year, I picked up cheerleading, and people, I didn't get bullied, mostly because I don't deal with that kind of stuff. People know better. I'm just not the one, really. I'm very proper, but don't try me. I don't know. I know girls that did get bullied and had to go to therapy and really had a hard time, and people that dropped the cheer team and people that just don't respect it as much as they should. And I've called out a few people on it that are just like, cheer isn't a sport. It's like, meet me on the mat. come to my practice. I want to show you what I do and see if you can make it. And a lot of people are just like, no, it's fine. I'm just like, okay, like, let me stretch you one good time. Let me show you one, like, 30-minute practice, and I will break you.
Right.
And I think a lot of people fail to see that, I mean, there are just as many bad injuries in cheerleading as there are in football. Or right. There are just as many deaths in cheerleading as there are in football. And I love my football team, and I always will, because those are my boys. Like, and they, not all of them I got along with, but at the end of the day, they were my team. And I would cheer them on at their first game, at their last game. And I remember going to the first game this year because there weren't enough cheerleaders to all go, because people stopped joining the cheerleading team because wow. It got so little respect. And every year we'd get snarky comments at like pep rallies, or yelled at and screamed at and have posters put up about us. And I would address the kids directly. Like one of the girls, one of our freshmen said, "This kid said this to me." And I went up to him and I said, "Did you say this?" Actually, I said, I'm not going to say his name. I said, "Are we friends?" And he was like, "Yeah, Mahogs, like, we're good friends." Like, what? We've been friends since freshman year. And I was like, and I'm a cheerleader, right? And he was like, "Yeah, I know." And I was like, "And you respect me?" And he's like, "Of course." And I was like, "So why are you harassing her?" And he's like, "Well, I don't know." And I'm just like, come on. Like, there's no need for that. Like, you know me. And I feel like, and I did this with a certain team in our school, put up another poster, and I called for a meeting with the entire team. And I had them all in the wrestling room, and I said, "Look, I don't know who did this. I don't care who. I'd rather not know, because I'm afraid of how I'll treat you afterward. And I want to be nice to all of you."
Right.
This is not okay. And I feel like I wanted to talk to you guys today, because I feel like once you put a face behind that sport, you put a face and you think about that every time you think about insulting the sport. You think about my face every time you think about bullying a girl for being a cheerleader. Because right now I'm talking to you, like, girl to girl, woman to woman, like, we've grown up together here, most of us. And some of you are just meeting me, and I wish we weren't meeting on these terms, but we are. But I'm Mahogany. I've been here. I live here. This is what I do. I'm a nice person. You can say hi to me in the hallway, and I swear I'll wave to you. But this is not okay, because this is my sport, and I respect yours. And there's no need to insult mine. And I got a lot of good feedback from that. Like, there were girls that I'd never spoken to that now said hi to me, or girls that were just like, "How are you?" And I feel like it's, you definitely have to just level. You can't always go off, which is something that I saw a lot of in New Haven. Like, you don't give those chances. Like, if you're disrespecting me, like, we're going to fix that kind of thing. But it's, and it really did humble me.
How you approach it.
It's all about your approach. And a lot of people, I'm not a very prideful person all the time. And I found that I can't be in Darien, because if you're very prideful, you better have a good reason, because you will lose your friends if you don't have a good reason to be prideful. Mm. But for me, it's like, I don't need that. I'd rather you respect me before I don't really need to be very prideful there. I don't really care for the intention. I was never the popular kid in high school, and I was okay with that. I knew all the popular kids. All the popular kids knew me. They all said hi to me, and I was like, "That's cool. You guys going to a party tonight? I don't have to be invited. That is complete. I will lay in my bed and watch Netflix all night. I don't care."
Right.
But it's more of just the recognition that I'm a person too. And I found that was something that I definitely had to put a lot of my personal, like, what I really wanted to say. Like, there were times where I really wanted to just go off. And I was like, I can't do that, because I have to keep in mind that there's going to be a cheerleader after them. And if I go off, they're not going to respect that cheerleader, because they're just like, I gave them a bad rep. And that's something that I definitely learned. You can really give a group a bad rep by just not being a good person.
And the bigger issue also is bullying. I mean,
yeah.
And it's, I mean, you know, administrators and parents and you know, law enforcement, everybody else can do whatever they do,
mm-hmm.
right? But to a large degree, you know, students can put a stop to it.
Yep.
Right? You know,
it's definitely possible. And we had this thing at my school called Names Day, in mm-hmm. which, like, it's an anti-bullying day, and you don't speak for the entire day to represent those kids that aren't able to speak up for themselves. And wow. I did it every year, and I always had a hard time because I talk a lot. But at the end of the day, we have a big pep rally, and we have an open mic. Up until this year, we always had an open mic in which kids can come up and talk about either a time they were bullied or apologize for a time that they bullied someone else and talk about their experience. And it got an amazing, like, people came up, like, the popular kids that you thought weren't gonna, like, they went up and they said, "I'm sorry." Right. Or kids that have been through something went up and they spoke about it, and people would come up and give them hugs. And, like, it really showed that these kids are not, they're not bad people. you just really have to take the time. And that's something that I saw different between Darien and New Haven. Like, my graduating class in New Haven was like 40, 30, 40 at best.
Right.
But the kids, like the teachers, were so much more personal in New Haven. And it's definitely harder, Darien, because it's a bigger class. But at the same time, the teachers didn't have any connection, really, as much as they did in Darien.
Right.
Like, the teachers care so much about the kids in Darien and in New Haven, and the kids are out doing crazy stuff, whereas, like, the teachers in Darien, they care about the kids, but they don't know all of them on a personal level.
Hmm.
You don't know their home life. You don't know what they've been through. And I feel like that's a... You get that difference in teachers. You get that difference in just overall environment. And a lot of these kids are raised not... Like, their parents travel. Their parents go everywhere. Their parents are working. They don't have their parents at home all the time. Their parents love them, but some of them are raised by au pairs. Some of them are raised by nannies. Like, it's a very, very different world. And that's another thing. Like, the money isn't always, it doesn't always show happiness. A lot of these kids are very unhappy, and a lot of them can't wait to get out of that town because they hate it just as much as I do.
Wow.
And it's something that you wouldn't know just by looking at it, because a lot of people are just blinded by the fact that they have money.
How were you able to maintain your grades and stay positive around, you know, your study habits and all of that without your parents being around?
Well, we have mandatory study hall in my house from 7:30 to 9:30 every night. And I usually went past that. Everyone does, because you just have so much work.
Right.
But also, we have to maintain a certain grade point average in order to stay in the program.
I see. So that motivated you.
That and the fact that I knew very early where I wanted to go, and I didn't end up getting into that college, which was upsetting, but I knew that I wanted to go to college. That was something that I wanted to do, and I wanted to go to a good college.
Right.
But also, being in that environment, like Darien, you definitely know you have to keep up academically, because you get to a point where, and this is not to take shots at any other school, but at some point you realize when you're applying to college, you are competing against your school.
Mm.
Darien was ranked number one at one point. You are competing against the kids in your grade. Like, the kids in your, the kids sitting next to you are your best friends and your worst enemies when applying to college.
Wow.
And I learned that the hard way when I got denied to my top choice college and the kids sitting behind me got in.
Right.
And I was just like, we can't be friends no more. we can't be. My teacher was an alumni there, and I was like, I can't wait to get out. Like, there it was. Like, I've always been a very big competitive person, but in that moment, I was like, I don't know how I'm going to be friends with you. And I found it hard, but I was just like, you know what? It happened for a reason, and I found flaws in that college that I didn't see when I applied. And I was like, you know what? I'm happy. I'm happy for you. I hope you have a great time there. And I've accumulated more friends that are now going to that college. And I was like, I don't know why, but it happens.
So why did you decide to go to the Miami University in Ohio?
It's one of the only universities in which you can major in a pre-professional, so pre-med.
Okay.
So taking pre-med as a course kind of it prepares you for MCAT. You have people that come in and speak to you about different things concerning pre-med, and it definitely keeps you on track as far as that's concerned. And that's kind of my end goal. So that was something that I wanted. And overall, it's a beautiful campus. My mom gave me a 4-hour radius for college because I'm so far away now, but I chose the one school that is outside of that 4-hour radius. I'm not going to say that has anything to do with it, but it was pretty intriguing. It's a beautiful campus. I know people there already. I've looked at all the sports. Ohio's big on football, which is something that I'm huge on.
Basketball now with Cleveland.
Right? Yeah, I know. I'm not a big
LeBron fan.
No, not at all. I'm very far. I was watching the game at my graduation dinner last night, actually. But no, I'm just not. I'm not a LeBron. I'm upset that this is going to Game 7. I'm not even gonna lie.
Nah, I'm happy about it. It's gonna be a great game. But okay, so track.
I started track sophomore year, and that was the year that I did three sports.
Wow.
So I did a sport every season. So I did basketball winter, cheer winter. I mean, basketball. When did I do basketball? I did cheer in the fall, basketball in the winter, and track in the spring.
Mm.
That was the order. So I was not completely there for track. My knees were not the best because with cheer, lifting, I was a base, so I was always on the bottom.
Okay.
So I was always lifting. And then with basketball, my knees were already bad. So when I got to track, I didn't know what I was going to do. I knew when I went here, when I was in New Haven, I ran a 4x1 with my cousin and two of my good friends. And we won in Hill House, which I will always remember because I remember watching the video and just like, we were so fast. And then looking at it now, we're just like, we are not fast. And one of my cousins still does track, and I actually saw her at State Opens a few weeks ago, which I went to for high jump, which has become my main event.
Okay.
So I've been doing high jump. This was my third year doing it. I was actually captain this year, which is really fun. Last season was my best season indoor. It was my first indoor season. I've never done indoor because I always did something else during the season, or I took a break. But this year I decided to do it, and I competed in high jump, long jump, and shot put. And people always hear me say that I do shot put, and they're just like, really? And it's
right.
You're not big enough to do shot put. And I'm just like, you come see me do shot put, and then you come talk to me kind of thing. I love shot put. I learned from one of the best shot putters that I know. She goes to my high school. She actually broke a record at my high school, which was my goal, which so I was very jealous, but I was very happy for her.
Right.
High jump has just been, it's been my happy place. I get there and there's something that you do when you're getting ready to jump. It's always consistent. You do it two or three times to get ready. It's like I don't know, I wouldn't call it like a warm up, but it's like to get yourself in the right mindset to balance out. And then you just blank out and you go and you do it and you stop thinking completely.
Right.
And I learned to do that because I think a lot. I think way too much. So when I started doing high jump, my coach would always joke with me, and he's just like, I can see you thinking. Like, there's steam coming out of your head. Stop. Don't hurt yourself. And like, we tried really hard to get me to get out of that. It's been very hard. But sophomore year, I took a really hard blow. I kneed myself in the head, gave myself a severe concussion. It's only the second time in my high school history that that's been done.
Wow.
So we took it as an accomplishment, but my mom was not too happy about it.
Right.
So I was out for a while, which was really upsetting. I had a hard time keeping up with school because I couldn't go to school. I was out. And I was in cocoon therapies, which is just a dark room, very lonely, which it was very hard to come back from. But I knew that when I came back, I wanted to come back strong. And that's exactly what I did. So this year, last season, I qualified for states in three events, in FCX in three events. And this season, I qualified for FCX in four events, but they didn't tell me until the day before that you're only allowed to compete in three, so I had to drop one. And then I only went to states in high jump, which I was very disappointed about, but I had a very long year, and towards the end, I started getting really tired, and I was like, my knees are giving out. I need to take a break. I didn't take big breaks in between the season because my coach's motto was just, they always asked us, when does the best athlete work the hardest? During the season, after the season, or before the season? And the best athlete would say before the season or between seasons. I could be getting this really wrong.
Right.
But I always try to work hardest between seasons.
Mm-hmm.
You build yourself up during those seasons so that during the season, you're not killing yourself. Like,
right.
I saw girls that would get out, and I did all the sprinting workouts even though I was a jumper. There was a girl that threw up on the first day of track.
Wow.
And I'll admit, it was a terrible workout. I was barely keeping up. But seeing that, it was just like, I'm glad that I did the work that I did before the season started.
Right.
That was something that I always tried to do. Just keep yourself going. Because no one else is going to push you like you do.
Now you're going to be traveling, to Australia and Hawaii.
Mm-hmm. I was recruited after my season last season because it was a very good season. I don't know where it came from. It came out of absolutely nowhere. I picked up two events last 3 weeks of the season and just qualified in states in both, and it was very crazy. But then I got a letter in the mail, and you know, you get those random letters and you think like it's just spam, like they just want money kind of thing. And I opened this one as I was leaving to get on the train. And I was like, take a picture of this. I'll read it on the train. So I read it and I like, she's like, what? And I said it to my mom and I was like, I want to do this. Like, this is something I want to do. I know that like it's going to cost a lot of money, but it's something that I want to do because this is my last year of track. And this is my summer before college. I want to do something that I love.
Right.
And we got all the materials and we got it all and we started fundraising. And we just finished fundraising. So we did meet it and it was just under $6,000 that
great.
I had to raise. And I couldn't believe it because that's a lot of money. Like that's like a semester of college for
that's
me right
awesome.
There.
Awesome.
But I was ecstatic about it and I was really, really happy and all my friends were happy for me and it was amazing.
Great, great. So track in college?
I'm hoping. So Miami of Ohio, it's a D1 school.
Right.
And I always told myself I'd be happy going D2, D3, just because D1 at that point, it's a job. And true. And at that point, I consider you more an athlete student than a student athlete.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like at a lot of D1 schools, it becomes you're an athlete first kind of thing, which right. is something I've never been able to put my mind. I'm always a student first.
Right.
And that's just how I was raised. That's just what I was taught. And I'm definitely, and I talked to a lot of people there that did track, and I was just like, how is it? Like, and they're just like, well, they have mandatory study hours. Like, you have to do this. And I'm like, that's a good start for me. As long as you have that in there. And I don't feel like I have to constantly struggle to keep up. But also, I don't know if I want to do it freshman year because freshman year, I want to explore. Like, it's a new place. There are new people. I can be whoever I want to be.
Good for you.
So it's definitely something that I'm considering because it's a great opportunity, and I think I do well there. But it's still on the table.
So pre-med, you want to be a doctor?
Mm-hmm. I want to be a neonatologist.
Okay.
So I want to work in the NICU with all the preemies. I actually intern there. For the last 6 weeks of high school, we do an internship. So I intern at Stanford Hospital. I was going to do Yale, but the commute, I had to get back for track every day. So it was right. too far of a commute. So I just interned at Stanford, which was amazing. I couldn't touch the babies, which is really hard for me because I love kids. but I helped out a lot, and I shadowed the nurses, and I learned a lot of stuff. So it was
awesome.
Nice.
Awesome. Well, we're proud of you.
Thank you.
You know, we're very proud of you. And, you know, before you leave, Mahogany Dolberry, man, I know you guys have been inspired out there, you know, Gotta show the positivity in our young people, man. That's what it's all about. What's the best advice you ever gotten from Hope?
I'd have to say it was from my mom, and it's advice and kind of a statement, and that I've lived by since freshman year. And it's closed mouths don't get fed.
Mm.
So if you want something, you need to speak up or you need to go get it because no one owes you anything in this world, which wow. is another thing she always said to me.
That's great. Well, congratulations, and you know, please come back.
Thank you.
You know, let us know after freshman year how things went.
I will.
Think that, we can have a little, reality show here. thank you again for coming.
Thank you.
All right. Juan Castillo with you. Oh, man, I feel good. I know you guys feel good out there. It's 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the cities, the electric drum, and we will see you next week.